Hey there, friends. I am Ryan Henry, and welcome to 180, where we get to share absolutely amazing stories of Christian transformation from around the world. I'm talking every stage, every age, every region, from a homecoming queen to a witch doctor. I mean, these stories are just so, so exciting. And you can find us at 180podcast.com. That's O-N-E-80podcast.com. And please, would you just press that share your story button, and maybe you'll even be able to be a guest on the show.
But I remember just sitting down in one of the pews by myself and just crying and saying, if there's somebody out there, rescue me. Take me out of here. I don't want this life.
Sent to the U.S. from Mexico, alone and young, Patty Campodónico found herself in heartache after heartache, but we can see the hand of God even at her early years as he rescues her from countless harms, including a gang initiation. She is discarded numerous times, but we'll see how God rescues her, setting her on the path to become an official U.S. missionary. Welcome to Patty's 180. Hey, Patty, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, the honor is mine. Thank you for having me.
It's so awesome to have you. We're going to have a good time and you know what, just share, you know, your amazing testimony. We'd like to start off with our 180 random question generator. Our question today is, which punctuation mark best describes your personality?
Well, definitely it's an exclamation mark. Is the wow, the surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. And your story, oh my gosh, I can't wait to get into your story because I feel like an exclamation mark is definitely like all over your story as well. So speaking of your story, let's get right in. So would you just go ahead and tell us about growing up in Mexico?
Well, yeah, I grew up in Mexico and in a small town called Matehuala. It's in the center of Mexico. So it's nothing like the border. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family with brothers and sisters. We were very poor. You know, there's no electricity, no water. We had to walk a long distance just to get water. I grew up with a father who was just very abusive. I'm very grateful that he was not abusive toward the kids. That's what I'm very thankful. But he was very mean and beat up my mom every weekend. So I grew up in fear of Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Those were the days that he would be drunk and honestly, we would just wait for him to get home and the violence will begin, you know, picking on my mom, throwing her and punching her. So watching that on a weekly basis, you know, I was a very angry kid. I was very different from the rest of my brothers and sisters. You know, a lot of them just crumble and I, in a sense, became a bully, became mean. But I really feel it was a coping. Hmm. That's how I cope with anger and rage. And anybody that got in my way, either I would beat them up or push them. But it was the hurt and the pain that I had. Yeah. And I feel that as a kid, you know, I never felt wanted, neither by my mom or by my dad. And yeah, I feel like they always tried to get rid of me. You know, they sent me away when I was 8 to go live with my grandmother. Yeah. In a sense, I became her maid. She was a mean person. You know, she won't feed me, so I'll wait until she fall asleep and sneak and go to the kitchen and steal a piece of bread or roll tortilla and just because I was hungry. And she will find me.
Oh my gosh, your own grandmother wouldn't feed you. Wow.
So yeah, that was really hard. Mm. You know, when you know you're not wanted, you feel it. And so, we didn't have the best relationship. I have really no recollection of even my parents or my mom ever saying that I was loved or that I was wanted. Honestly, the rest of my relatives, they're like, and who are you? Well, I'm related to all this craziness, you know, not even my relatives knew I was part of the family. So yeah, that was really hard. And in the midst of all that, the anger and the hate that I have for my father, I wanted him to hear it from me. And I remember going to him and telling him my whole purpose in life when I grow up is to kill you. I will kill you.
Oh my gosh.
That was my dream. Oh, man. And I thought that's the only way to stop him from hurting my mom. And so, you know, I grew up as an atheist. Yeah. We never really talked about God. I had no idea there was even a God. I believed you live and died, and that's life. You survive on your own. I have no clue there was something beyond. So I remember, you know, later on, I remember walking the streets in my town and passing this huge Catholic church. And I thought, well, maybe that's where that divine person lives. And I remember walking in there. I always had this desire. I always had this dream that I wanted something different for my life. And I remember walking in there, but I remember just sitting down in one of the pews by myself and just crying and saying, if there's somebody out there, rescue me, take me out of here. I don't want this life. I just had that deep desire of wanting something more. And just crying and begging somebody out there that could see me, take me out of here.
Wow, that's so powerful.
So, you know, honestly, a year later, after me saying that request, I didn't even know that was a prayer, that begging of a child. I was probably 10 when I asked that. And, you know, the years passed and nothing happened. Situation the same, you know, with seeing my mother and watching my sister's lives just being destroyed as well. My dad calls me back to the house with my, you know, I come home from my grandmother's house and he says, you know, we got a letter. You actually have a sister and she lives in a worse situation than we do. You know, her husband also beat her up and the husband is mean to the kids. I need you to go help them. And the same way that you stopped me from beating your mom, you need to go help. I thought I was going for a week. I had no idea where I was going. They put me in a bus. I'm 12 at that time, and they said, you're going to go and help your sister. You're going to protect her. You're going to defend her from this abusive man.
Wow.
So, you know, I get in this bus, and they told me, don't get off the bus. Somebody will pick you up in the other side. And I'm thinking, okay, somebody's going to pick me up. And so many things could have happened to me. You know, I had no idea I was coming to a different country. I have no idea who was going to pick me up.
Were you terrified?
You know what? I think part of me was really afraid, but also I had that strong little personality that I was going to go and protect someone. That really, I couldn't live in fear. I wouldn't make it. So I think I think I was terrified, but I didn't let that fear take control of me. And I just said, I'm going to go and help her, and then I'm coming back. So it's truly a miracle. You know, you need papers to come to this country. I had nothing. I didn't have even a birth certificate that says who I was. I was really scared being by myself, alone with nobody. And, you know, seeing the people getting out and walking. And they probably thought I was somebody's kid. And I'm grateful that they didn't force me to get out. They didn't force me to do things. You know, they're just, okay, just leave her. And to that advantage, you know, I was a child. And so they didn't, in that sense, it was really a protection. Because I feel like if I gotten out and they asked me, well, take all your identifications, why would I show them? I had no idea where I was going.
Right. Was the bus crowded?
Yeah, I mean, I just remember lines and lines of people and just watching the people showing them, you know, papers. And I'm just like, I'm staying here. Nobody's going to move me.
Right. And then what happened? How did you meet up with your sister?
And somebody picked me up and said, I'm taking you to your sister. Never met these people in my life. I'm a kid. you know, that now that I'm here and I think about, you know, what is happening right now with the immigration and so many kids are coming, really, they have no, a lot of them have no clue where they're going because I didn't. Honestly, I feel it was the hand of God, even though I didn't know his name at that time. He was guiding my life. So when the bus crosses, you know, then you have to get out of the bus because you have to, that was the Mexican bus. Right. So you need to get out to go to the American bus, you know. So as I'm getting out, this man approached me and he says, "We've been waiting for you." You know, there I am trusting. I said, "Oh, okay." And I do remember getting into this man's car and we just drove and drove and drove and drove. And so I ended up in Dallas, Texas, in an area that is, it was pretty dangerous. It's South Dallas. You know, I get in there and she actually says, "We know because you're new, this is a very dangerous area. You are going to be, you're going to take care of the two kids that she had." And she said, "I'm going to lock you in here." So they, her and her husband, they will go to work and they will lock the door. So I was, I couldn't get out. For the first month or two, it was, he was very nice and very peaceful. And I thought, well, he, she's not in trouble. Can I just go back home? You're fine. Mm-hmm. And she said, "No, once you're here, do you know how difficult it is to get into this country? You're already here. We have to pay to bring you here." I was just like, "Well, where am I?" She says, "You're in America, you live in Dallas." And, you know, that was scary because I thought, I want to go home. I don't, I'm in prison here with you. I have nothing, you know, by that time, I only went to school in Mexico up to sixth grade. And that, after I finished sixth grade, my parents said, "Okay, now you got to work and bring money for us to live." Somehow the kids are responsible to make your parents live, which I don't understand that. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So what was inside their house like? You said he was nice for the first, you know, couple months, but how did, you know, what happened?
Yeah. So we lived in, I think it was a studio type of apartment. It's a little room and that was their room. And I sleep in the sofa, take care of the kids. Again, it was they were very poor themselves too. Constantly the neighbors, you will hear the screaming, the yelling, the cursing, the name it, everything happened outside my apartment. So I can understand why she was afraid for me to go out as a kid and being very ignorant of so much. You come from a very small, in a sense, it's a very small village to a huge city. That was terrifying. And not understanding the language.
So, oh gosh, I can't even imagine. So you mentioned there's trouble outside of your apartment as well. So did you yourself get into trouble in Texas?
You know, no, couldn't. I didn't have any friends. I was not allowed to go out. So for the first 6 months, I was just in the apartment without going out. My only outside, it was through the window, you know, looking at the window. There's people out there.
Yeah.
You know, she honestly made me really afraid of the world outside. You never want to be without us. You never. So that was really scary. And, you know, then after a few months, then he started coming home drunk. Just evil. This is an evil human, you know. You know, trying to protect my sister and at the same time holding her son and her little girl. So I have two little kids. I'm a kid holding two kids and watching my sister being punched multiple times, bleeding, being kicked. And you just, honestly, you know, you are paralyzed. You think, "I'm going to jump," and you literally physically can't move because of just the horrific images. You know, it's just, I just couldn't move, but I was just protecting the kids. You know, my sister will be bleeding, black eye. And then he will leave. And there he goes that weekend. The next weekend, it'll be the same. The next weekend after weekend. And then more anger, more hate within me that I thought if I could only have enough courage to kill him. I'm just trying to survive. I had no clue. I was an atheist of an atheist. Zero knowledge of anything holy. After several months now, my sister began to give me a little freedom, and I was able to go out, meet some of the neighbors. She allowed me, taught me how to go to the laundromat and wash clothes. And I remember a particular girl, her name was Sally. So we developed a friendship. I just love Sally. Mm-hmm. She knew, she was my neighbor, so she knew the type of environment that I lived. She knew about the abusive husband that my sister had. And so she began to say, you know, you can be part of my group and we protect you, we'll defend you. We can even remove your sister's husband and we'll become your family. And we're all the same age. Wow. Right? You know, when you've never been wanted and all of a sudden you have a girl that sure. is your age and you like her and you think, wow, a group that will defend me, a group that will protect me, a group that will become my family. That is really attractive to a teenager that is full of rage, full of anger, feels alone, that nobody really cares for. And then you hear those right. words. And I remember just telling Sally, just tell me what to do. I want to be part of this group. I want to be part of your family. And, you know, that's when she said, she says, well, there's things that you have to do if you want to be part of it. You have to be initiated. You have to pass tests. You know, you have to do things. And I thought, I don't care. I'll do whatever to be part of your group. And so she says, okay, we're going to do it at this time, a certain time, and we'll come and get you. And I thought, yeah, I can do it. At least I had now somebody that wanted me to be part of their family. And I thought, maybe this is my way out of this type right. of life that I had. And so, you know, like 2 days later, my sister said, I need you to go to the laundromat and wash clothes. And I was excited. Wow, I get to get out of the apartment. And I went and I was sitting, putting the clothes in the laundromat. And this girl comes in and she speaks Spanish. And I was like, oh. And she looked my age. And we started a conversation, you know, just what's your name, where you're from, where you live, you know, what do you like? Just like what teenagers talk about. But what was so attractive to me about her is when she said, hey, do you want to go to my church? I never heard those words. And I thought, my church? Wow, you own a building? You own a church? I mean, I'm like really serious. And she's like joking and she says, yeah. And outside she says, Juanita's church. And I thought, wow, she owns a building. I want to go because I want to yeah. know how to own a building like her. And maybe I can live in wow. my own building. See, that was my think wow. of going. And so then she says, yeah, you know, there was this lady and her name was Miss Cuby. And Miss Cuby had her little van and she will go in our neighborhood and pick up all these kids. And she says, well, she will come. And when she picks me up, I will tell her to stop in your apartment and you can come with us. So I was just, yeah, I'm going to go and I'm going to learn how to have my own church. Why not? And again, I didn't tell my sister, so I was pretty excited and I couldn't wait for Juanita. You know, I'm just waiting and right. she comes. And so I go with her and I end up going to this church and I'm sitting down and I see this man has a book and is walking back and forth, yelling and screaming. And people all around me are standing up and saying, yes, brother, amen, hallelujah, preach it. And I'm terrified. It was very terrifying for someone who did not understand. Number one, I didn't speak English. Number two, Juanita was so excited that I was there that she forgot to translate. And I could not wait to get out of that terrifying building because I didn't understand. I thought they were angry and yelling. And so I remember when everything stopped, you know, people are praying and I thought, well, I don't know what's going on, but I want to get out of this building. And Miss Ruby drove all of us back And when I get there, when they're, you know, drop me off in the apartment, there's all these cops and all these families out. My sister's crying. And I'm like, what's going on? She comes and pulls me and she says, where have you been? We can't find Sally. So that was the night of the initiation that I forgot about it. So a lot of kids got hurt. Things went wrong. And I was supposed to be there. I was supposed to be initiated. And that was the last time I heard from Sally. I honestly don't know what happened to her. I don't know if she got killed. I don't know if she got hurt. But I was supposed to be with her. But I ended up at church. And so...
Wow.
Yeah. That was the beginning of introducing that God was going to do something that I had no idea.
Thanks for tuning in to 180, brought to you by One Way. Make sure to follow, like, and share our show with your people. Now, back to the show.
So, you know, when I told my sister I was at church, she didn't even hear it. She was just happy that I was there, and she brought me back into the house. And, you know, the next day was, they went back to work, and my life was babysitting their kids. But something different happened, you know. Later on the next day, the crazy man that was walking with the book in that church ended up in my home. Well, Juanita was so happy that I came with her that she filled out the visitor's card with all my information. And this amazing human used to walk my neighborhood, and now he had an address. It ended up in my home, knocking the door, and he says, and he spoke Spanish. And at first, I was really scared, and I thought, who told him where I live? Yeah. He says, you know, can I come in? Can I talk to you? And I'm here with this kid, you know, that I'm babysitting. And I was like, okay. The first thing that I remember saying is, there is this amazing, amazing God, and his name is Jesus, and he loves you. That was number one, never heard. Ever, not once, that I was loved. Number two is that, you know, he loved you so much that he took your place and gave his life for you. What? Someone died for me. And number two, he's here with you. He's here. Wow. You know, just the way he communicated to me what this God, what this name Jesus meant, I just fell in love immediately. And when he says, you know, all he wants from you, Patty, is your life. I said, that's all he wants. That's all what this amazing God wants is my life. So number one, the things that I always wanted to hear is that I was loved and that I was wanted. And all he wanted from me was my life. And I remember then it's his. I want to give it to him. And right there, you know, and I honestly fell in love with him. I fell in love with Jesus.
Wow. That is beautiful. Fred, you fell in love with Jesus from the man you thought was angry, yelling at the beginning, at the front of a church. That's so funny. Wow. It's amazing to think about how your perspective and your life experience shaped the way that you saw him and how your first church experience. I know. So God just, he moves in such mysterious, mysterious ways. So here you are, you're in love with Jesus now. And so what happened? I mean, did you notice a change right away?
You know, the one thing that immediately, nobody told me to stop cursing, but the way people talked to me, it was every other bad word. That's how they talked to me. So that's all I heard, and that's how I spoke. And that was the first thing that I just couldn't say those words. The anger was still there, but I wasn't this bully type of mean human. That changed a little bit. And I remember my sister saying, I don't know what's going on with you, but you need to bring those words back. I think it was a sense, that's how I used to talk to her husband, you know, so... trying to defend her and those situations. But when I told her, well, every Sunday, you know, the the pastor's name is Erwin and his wife Kim, we used to come and pick me up every Sunday. So I told them I'm going out every Sunday with this family and I'm going to the church. And I did, you know, every Sunday they came and picked me up and I went. But the battle began with my sister, not only with her, but now her husband, both of them. And then when I told them, Jesus is in my heart, Jesus is in my life, that was the worst that I could say because I was a worthless kid. How can you say that Jesus is in your heart? You're evil. And I didn't understand. Wow. I was like, this is so amazing. You have no idea how that feels. He is real. And I was trying to explain to them just the beauty of knowing our value and our worth and that I was wanted. But the fights and the meanness of my sister and the name calling, it was every single day. You know, Erwin and Kim gave me a Bible. So I would just, honestly, I wanted to learn as much as I can of this Jesus. I wanted to know everything about him. And I just began to read and just read. And a lot of it didn't make sense. A lot of it was a very strange names, a very strange language. But I still wanted to know him, you know, and my only place to read it was in the bathroom. Many times they will find my Bible and they will throw it away. And then I wait until everybody was asleep and go take it out of the trash and read it again. And so my sister honestly gave me a choice. She's like, you either live with us and stop all that nonsense, or if you're going to follow whatever this craziness, we don't want you in our home. She's my only family. Where am I going to go? I have nothing. And I didn't tell the pastor and his family what was happening in my home. I didn't tell them that they were very, very mean to me. I remember being asked by the pastors, the next step, if you say you want to follow Jesus with everything, is you need to get baptized. Baptism is just a symbol. It's not going to transform you. It's nothing, you know, Jesus himself did it. And I thought, I want to do everything this Jesus did. I want to follow every step. So if he got baptized, I want to get baptized because I want to be, I want to be like him. I really want to be like him.
Such a beautiful heart.
And so when he said that, I was like, okay, well, I'll do it. I'm going to do it. And so he explained, you want to put you in the water. And I was like, okay, I don't care what it's going to be. I just want to do what Jesus did. If he did it, I'm doing it. I was so excited. And I remember telling my sister, I'm getting baptized because I want people to know that I'm going to follow this God and he loves me and he's transforming me. And that was it to her. It was like, all right, if you do it, you are out of here. So I remember being so excited, you know, the pastor and his wife come and pick me up. It's like, come on, I want to get baptized and I want to take me home because I could not wait to see my sister. And for her to believe like I believe, to her to see and feel what I feel for Jesus. You know, I got home and my hair is wet and I tell her and she kicked me out. And so, I was homeless. So I just started knocking on people's homes and I told them the truth. I said, my sister kicked me out. I got baptized. I love Jesus. Can I live with you? Door after door was closed. I was considered weird. Wow. I was considered crazy. Finally, I knock on this door and this couple opened the door and I tell them, they knew my sister. And they said, well, you can stay here, be the nanny for our boys, but we have the same rules as your sister. No church, no Jesus stuff. I needed a place to live. So I said, okay, I'll stay. But the no Jesus, I thought, he's so part of me. I cannot. I'm going to tell him yes, but I will never stop loving and reading his word. And they let me stay with them as a nanny. And again, in another situation where, you know, they're strangers, they have three boys, and the father is not physically abusive toward the kids and the wife, but he is verbally abusive. The meanest words will come out of his mouth toward the kids. You know, he will call them piece of trash, worthless animals.
Oh my gosh.
It's just Wow. And you're there, you know, at their mercy, living in their home as a nanny. And so when they will leave, I'll stay with them and have my little Bible, and I would just tell them about Jesus and how valuable and how much of a treasure they were to him. And
to the children, you
I
told
did,
them.
I did, even though they told me not
That's
to.
That's beautiful.
Now I knew the beauty of Jesus. Yeah. So I lived with them for about, you know, like half a year. And I stopped going to church. Again, I was not allowed to go out. I was their maid. And so I lived with them, and it's not like I could go out. I was their property in a way. And I didn't have anything nothing legal paper that said who I was.
Right.
And so there was one night, and the fathers calling their kids unimaginable words that a child should never listen to, those being called trash, worthless, nothing. And the oldest son looked at his dad and he says, "Dad, to you, I'm a piece of trash, but to God, I'm a treasure." The father looked at me and he says, "Get out of my house. Get out."
Oh my gosh, Patty, that's amazing.
Yeah. I was like, okay, here I go again. And literally, as I'm walking out of their house, there is Erwin and his little car. He says, "Patty, we have been looking for you. We didn't know where you were." He found me. And he said, Kim, his wife, she says, she told me, get in the car and go look for Patty and bring her home.
Wow. This is the pastor. Wow.
He never left me, you know. So, yeah, got my little suitcase, got in his car, and I lived with them until I got married.
Wow.
Yeah. But really, you know, if you think about it, who takes a broken kid into their home? I was a stranger to them. They put a lot of trust, really, to bring me to their house and to treat me as their daughter. It's going to be the family of God. He never once left me. And you know what? I might never see those children, those three boys, but I hope they remember what I told them and how much value they were to Jesus. So there's a reason why he put me in that home for those months.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when wow. I came to live with Erwin and Kim in their home, I didn't speak English. My dad spoke, now I call him Mom and Dad. You know, he spoke Spanish, so I was able to communicate with him. But with Kim, I wasn't. And I remember she will take, this is the beauty of who they are. She would take everything from the kitchen and she said, "Patty, this is salt, pepper, plate, cup." And that's how she began to teach me English.
Yeah.
That's how we began to communicate. And you know, when she was pregnant, when I came to live with them, I was not an easy kid. I was very broken, you know, And then they said, "Patty, we got to put you in school." You know, I was not in school. By then, I was 14, almost 15 when I came to live with them. And I thought, well, I don't have anything. I have no papers. I don't know. And I had to go back to my sister and beg her to give me the address of my parents in Mexico so I can write them a letter asking them, send me some identification so I can live my life. And they did, you know, they did. They sent me my birth certificate. And so this family, amazing, beautiful family that took me in, they put me in a school. And, you know, I didn't speak English. I study like crazy. Sesame Street is amazing to learn English. learned English with Cookie Monster and Elmo.
Oh my gosh, it's beautiful.
And then children are amazing. They're amazing teachers. So within a year, you know, I went from what, K through eighth grade. I was able to go through all that. And then finally, after I finished that year, that private small school gave me a report card so I can go to public school. And I was so in love with Jesus. I love him so much. And I remember when they put me in a public school, and I wanted to meet every kid and tell them, let's study God, let's read our book, let's learn about him. And they would look at me like I was really strange. And I didn't understand them. I really didn't understand them, because a lot of them said, oh, yeah, we're Christians. Yeah. And I thought, well, what does that mean to you? I said, to me, I'm following every step that Jesus took. And he walked the streets, and he knocked on people's doors, and he told them how much they were loved. And that's what I want to do. And I did. I used to walk my neighborhood. I used to walk the apartment complex and every door that was open because somebody knocked on my door. Yeah. I wanted to do that. And I remember on one occasion, I did walk one apartment complex, and my parents, you know, my foster parents now, they couldn't find me, and they're like, where were you? I said, well, I went to that apartment complex, and I walked every door and told them about Jesus. But then I don't know any churches around here, so I just told them, just find a Baptist church and knock the door and tell them, you know, you accepted Jesus. Because that's what happened to me. I wanted to tell every person, because I know what it means to live in hell. I did. Oh, I lived in hell, and Jesus. I was rescued to live in heaven.
Wow.
You don't have to wait to die to experience heaven.
Come on.
You experience heaven here. But you have to trust, and you have to believe. That's the thing. You have to trust and believe that in the midst of horrific experiences, you can live in heaven. And so when, I mean, it's just amazing. And you know, when I finished high school, my parents, we moved to California. And that's when I realized, oh my goodness, I'm here illegally. That's when I realized, when I started applying to universities, and they're like, but you have a social security number. And I just said, well, can you give me one? And they're like, no, that's something that you're given. Oh my gosh. I didn't know. But I fill out all the applications to go to a university. And when he says, you know, do you have a social security number? I didn't put anything. And I mailed it to the university anyway. And I will walk to that university, to the admissions office. And I says, did you get my admissions? Did you get my applications? And they're like, there she goes again. That's that girl again, you know. And
persistent.
And so after a week or two, I remember telling the lady, this is the last time I'm going to come. Can you just check to see if I'm in your program, if I'm in your system? And she felt sorry for me. And she says, you know, I'm going to check. What's your name again? Tell her my name. She put it in the computer. And she said, what? You are in our system.
What?
Yes, I got admitted. And I even got a scholarship. I went to school. And I said, okay, when do I come to classes?
And so gosh.
That was Jesus, because I had nothing, no way that I should even be in that university. I did. I went to school for 2 years. And then after 2 years, they realized I am not legal in this country. And I got a letter from the university saying, you are going to be kicked out and possibly even be kicked out to Mexico. Huh. I went home and I just started crying. And I remember being in the car with my mom, who doesn't speak Spanish. And I'm playing with the radio. And I stopped in a radio station in Spanish. And it's actually an immigration officer saying, there's a new law only for missionaries that can apply and be residents of this country, of the U.S. And he told us the address of where to go. And I just told my mom, take me, please take me to this place somewhere in downtown L.A. And she's like, what are you talking about? So just take me. And she did. She drove I got to this little place, a little office, and I told them I heard the information on the radio. Do you have that application for special immigrants? And the lady said, oh, yeah, yeah, here, here's the application. I brought it home. My parents found a lawyer that understood the whole paperwork, and he just laughed, and he said, this is impossible. She's not even a pastor. She's haven't gone to seminary. She hasn't. She's a kid. She can't be a missionary. And he says, I don't want any part of this because this is an impossible situation. I had a year, honestly, to prove or somehow get my green card. It is incredible because when I fill out the whole application, I send all the paperwork. I never lied. I told them, I'm a missionary here. I'm walking the streets. I'm doing church planting with my parents, which we were. And I'm telling people about Jesus. And this is why I want to stay in this country. And
wow,
after a year of making the whole process, I remember my dad driving me to the immigration, not knowing. But I went to the interview. And when I was interviewing, they asked why I wanted to live in this country. I told them how I came and that I wanted to be a missionary in the U.S. And stamp was given. I was sworn in. And that is how I live here, legally. Within a year, those things don't happen. They don't happen. You know, after I became legal and had my green card, one of my first things that I wanted to do was to go back home and look at my biological father's eyes and ask him to forgive me for telling him that I wanted to kill him. Yeah. I think I needed forgiveness myself, even though he will never ask. And he never changed. God did give me the privilege to go back to Mexico and look at my father, and I asked him to please forgive me. It was a very painful, very dysfunctional type of love where I had to make a decision and say, you know what, they are not my parents. And to say to them, I love you, but I cannot have you be part of my life.
And so if you don't mind, were you able to finish college then?
I finished college. I have a degree in child development. I'm a teacher.
Wow.
I've been teaching for over 20 years and I love it. But not only that, the Lord sent me and my husband to live in Indonesia. There was a lot of opportunities where I was able to share the beauty and the love of Jesus with those who don't believe in him.
That's so good. It's so good. Well, Patty, this has been so good. And I want to ask one more question, if you don't mind. So I want you to think about the Patty at age 12, but never having gotten invited to that church, never meeting that life-changing pastor, actually attending that gang initiation. Who would Patty be today without Jesus?
I think number one, I think I honestly will become a killer. When you have so much hate and no value for anything and you in survivor mode, I will either be killed or will have been a killer because I wanted that so bad. I did. Wow. I wanted to have the courage to kill first my dad and second my sister's husband. And I feel like if I had joined the gang, I will have become really good at it because there's no love. You know, there's no purpose. My life was hell. And being rescued, you know, there are times that I'm just full of gratitude. He is truly incredible. And he speaks so loud and very clear. There's so many, you know, there's so many different instances in my life where God has spoken to me very, very clearly. And I'm not going to say that I have always heard him. There are times that I do doubt. There are times that I do question. There are times that I wrestle with him. But my love for him has never stopped.
Amen. Amen. That's so good. And it's so good for our listeners to hear that first step is to simply open your heart and to allow yourself to cry out, save me, save me, because he's faithful. Patty, thank you so much for being here with us on 180. We are so thankful for you opening your heart to us and sharing your story.
Thank you. It's an honor, really.
Thanks, Ryan. How about your story? God wrote it, so it's already awesome. Why not share it? We want to hear your 180 testimony. Check out our website to see how at 180podcast.com. That's O-N-E-80podcast.com. We'll help you put your story together so you can share it. We've got thought-provoking writing prompts that will get you started. And of course, we'd love your follow, review, and share of our show. Today's send-off features Drew Neal, our 180 rap artist, with his reflections on our show. Send us off, Drew.
I send prayers way high up, way up into the sky, still haven't gotten a reply, no, but God don't turn eye, yo. I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, yeah. I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, yeah. Trying to get better, don't wanna be bitter. I'm a fighter forever, been fighting forever. Praying over and over again. God, I just want my past to be sober. God, I just want my pain to be over. We going up and down like a roller coaster. I got tunnel vision, never lost sight. My eye like the tiger, my eye on the prize. I never gave up, I just played my position. No, one day God will come through and put me in position, yeah. Back then I was down in fear, I had no place to go. Trying to balance my life like I was walking on rope, yeah, yeah. Trying to argue with God like I think I know better, but I should've known better, yeah, yeah. I'ma stick to the plan, I already know he got a plan. I've been killing my doubts and my demons. I'm a murderer right on the scene and I'm going in. I send prayers way high up, way up into the sky, yo. Still haven't gotten a reply, no, but God don't turn eye, yo, yo, yo. I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, yeah. I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, yeah. Gotta hold on to hope. It's all that I got,
all that I got, yeah. All that I got, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All that I got, all that I needed. I need a purpose, I need a meaning. I need a minute, need new beginnings. Need to cut off the addictions, temptations, and demons. Need the angels, forgiveness, and loves of amens. When we back together after making amends, see the real path from what we thought was dead ends.
Okay.
All things have been working in my favor,
yeah.
I'm still putting my favorite flavor,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Love, save me. Way high up, way up into the sky, yo. Still haven't gotten a reply, no. But God don't turn eye, yo, yo, yo. I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, yeah. I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on, I've been trying to hold on.
One 180 is a production of One Way Ministries.